Hey, Bible readers, I'm Tara Lee Cobble, and I'm your host for the Bible Recap. Today in Genesis 8 through 11, we read about the aftermath of the Great Flood, and everything on earth has been destroyed except for eight people on the ark: Noah, his wife, their three sons, and their three wives, plus the animals. Post-flood, we see God establishing this covenant with Noah that he had promised to establish pre-flood, and we see God engaging with this family of people and promising to be faithful to them, despite how every other aspect of their world has shifted dramatically. Everyone they know is dead, the world is muddy and gross, and they're living in a new location. Everything has changed. Even their lifespan will change. We read about this yesterday in Genesis 6:3. God gave them a little heads up not to expect those crazy long lifespans anymore. The environment had changed dramatically, and they're a couple millennia removed from the genetic perfection of Adam and Eve, so it makes sense that they would drop to 120 years at this point. Despite all these changes, God makes some promises to them of something that will not change. He enters into this covenant with them, promising that he will never again destroy the earth with a flood. Later in Scripture, in 2 Peter 3, we find out that he will someday destroy the earth with a fire, but not with a flood. And in the same way that the earth existed after it was destroyed by water, because we're standing on it right now, it will still exist after it's destroyed with fire. In fact, in the eternal kingdom, all of those who have been adopted into God's family will reign with Christ on the recreated earth. We see this in Revelation 5, so if this is confusing to you, hang in there. I know it's still a long way off in our reading plan, but we'll get there in another 11 and a half months or so. I think all this is really interesting, especially as it regards the ultimate limits of global climate change. Now, feel free to disregard everything I say here. This is just my opinion, but from my humble vantage point, climate change really does seem to be happening. I don't think it's a myth. We're causing a lot of damage to the earth God created, and I think it's important for us to be good stewards of his gifts. That's biblical. But I'm not sure how much we're actually going to do that collectively. So I'm comforted to know that God, who is sovereign over it all, promises that there will at least be some kind of limit to the damage that we humans can do. Because Genesis 8:22 tells us that there will always be seasons and harvests as long as the earth remains. But don't get me wrong, that's not an excuse to just live however we want. That's not the messaging here. God has some plans he calls Noah to join in on, given that there are now only eight people on earth, and especially given God's ultimate plan to send the Messiah through a poor woman who wouldn't even be born for another 2,000 years. God reminded them in Genesis 9:1 that they had a role to play in accomplishing his purposes by telling these eight people to be fruitful and multiply. Given the billions of people on earth today, it looks like they obeyed, but guess what? They also kind of hedged. They didn't start out filling the earth, they only started out multiplying. In 11:4, we see how they really prefer to stay put instead of spread out. They pridefully reject his command, but God, being the sovereign God that he is, continues to work out his plan despite their resistance. In 11:9, he disperses them over the face of the earth. Rest assured, he accomplishes his plans. We cannot thwart his will despite our best sinful efforts. And this should feel more like a great comfort to us than a threat. Aren't you glad you can't mess up his plan? I know I am. We hit another weird patch in Genesis 9:18 through 27, and there are a lot of theories about what's going on here. There's much debate about what this part about Noah's sons seems to mean, but the general conclusion is that his son Ham committed some kind of action that was contrary to God's orders, so much so that it was obvious. And again, like we talked about when Cain murdered Abel, we're still pretty far ahead of the Ten Commandments here. But there's still an understanding of what's right and wrong, even though it hasn't been written out with 10 laws on tablets or 613 laws on scrolls, which are coming in our next few books, by the way. As a result of what Ham did, Noah curses Ham and his descendants in 9:25 through 27, and then in 10:6 through 20, we see these cursed descendants listed out. One curse line that I really want to highlight is one that we'll continue to see throughout Scripture. They're the Canaanites. For the most part, they are seen as the enemies of God's people. But he does some really beautiful things by redeeming people outside of his clan, like Rahab the prostitute, who was a Canaanite, but who is also part of the lineage of Jesus. This actually serves as a picture for us of how God acts toward any and all of us that he redeems, because we're all enemies of God by birth. All God's children are children by adoption. So in this picture, we see God fulfilling his promises both to bless and to curse. So where did you see God's character portrayed today? What's your God shot for today? Here's mine. He's a God who blesses and who curses. Now, if you remember, he did a whole lot of blessing in the first few chapters of Genesis, and we saw more of that today. We hear people say a lot that God is love, and that's true, but it's incomplete. He doesn't just dole out blessing. He's much more complex than that. And even still, what we see is that he's a God who blesses his enemies. Like I said, that's how we all started out. And for those of us who've been adopted into his family, we were blessed when he pursued us as his enemies and clothed us in the righteousness of Christ. This is reminiscent of what we read about the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve sinned. When they sinned and hid from him, he pursued them. He chased them down, not to punish them, but to clothe them. He did that with us too. It's evident every day on the pages that we're reading that he's where the joy is. Tomorrow, we're going to move into the book of Job, and we'll be there for a little less than 2 weeks. The reason we go to Job now instead of continuing in Genesis is because we're reading chronologically. Most biblical historians put Job's timeline after Noah, but slightly before the timeline of Abraham. So we'll go read Job's story in the book of Job, then we'll pop back over here to Genesis, where we'll dive right into Abraham's story afterward. The Bible Recap is going to Israel, and we want you to join us. To find out more about our trip, visit mydgroup.org/Israel and fill out the interest form. Then we'll send you details on our upcoming trip to the Holy Land. You can also swipe up in the show notes for a direct link. It's a great chance to see Scripture come alive. It's the best trip I've ever taken, and I really would love for you to join me. The Bible Recap is brought to you by D Group, discipleship and Bible study groups that meet in homes and churches around the world each week.